You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi there. Welcome to the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I am here to help you break free from body shame, binging, and diets that don't work. I want you to wake up and think about your day, not your diet. And if you love the show, please take a moment to rate it or even leave a comment or a review in Apple Podcasts. Just look for the Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio and go give it some stars. I would really appreciate it. And if you would like to join me today, the number is 323-203-0815. That is 323-203-0815. I would love to hear what's on your mind, what is weighing on you, because the real problem with binging, stress eating, any kind of emotional eating, the real problem is not food. It's not what you're eating that's the problem. It's what's eating at you. So I see Josh on Instagram has a question. Hold that question, Josh, because I had another question from someone who wrote, I am always able to figure out why I binged after it happened, but how do I learn to stop before? And what is the replacement for feeling empty? Those are all excellent questions. So first, I just want to go over the process of change. The process of change is a process, like I was kind of saying before I started the show. So the first step is you say, oh, I'm a food addict. I have no willpower. I have no control. There's something wrong with me. And you feel such intense and horrible shame. The second step is you realize, oh, something is going on. It's not about willpower. It's not about control. But I don't know what it is until after I sit down and figure it out with somebody else, with a therapist or in a group. The third step is you figure it out on your own afterwards. And I think that's where this person is. She can figure it out afterwards. Oh, that's why I did that. The next step is you identify it beforehand. You go, oh, I know why I want to go eat whatever, but I don't care. I'm going to do it anyway. I can't deal. I'm going to do it anyway. The next step after that, see how many steps there are? The next step after that is, I know why I want to eat. I know why I want to binge. I know what's going on. But you know what? I'm not going to use food. If I'm turning to food, I'm turning away from something else. I know what that is. And I am going to respond to myself differently. How? I'm going to get to that in a second. The last step. Because that's not the last step, by the way. The last step is not, no, I'm going to do something differently. The last step is it doesn't even occur to me to go into the kitchen or to a drive-thru or call Postmates. It doesn't even occur to me because I'm so good at responding to what comes up without using food that it doesn't even cross my mind. That's liberation. As I was saying right before we officially started, I don't believe in recovery. Recovery from binge eating or recovery from any kind of eating disorder, ugh, recovery. It's something you're in. You're always in. You're in recovery. No, liberation is you've dealt with it. You've changed your way of relating to yourself. You are different to yourself, and therefore food is not a problem. And you can eat what you want without all the stress and the worry and the fear of gaining weight or the wish to lose weight or all of that, that's behind you. That's in the rear view mirror. That's liberation. And I want you all to have liberation, not be in recovery. Okay, so that's the process of change. As far as how do you figure it out beforehand? That is where my food mood formula comes in. If you don't have my book where I really outline that in detail, you can also get my guide on my website. Just go to drninainc.com and get your copy of the food mood formula workbook. But you can also look at it in depth in my book. shameless self-promotion. Here's my book. But I'm going to tell you what it is anyway. I know a lot of you know what it is, but it doesn't hurt to hear it often. So if you don't know what's going on, because we're so quick to go, boom, right to food, we don't even know we're being triggered. We think we're being triggered by food often. That's why it's so difficult. The triggers are often hidden. But you want to think about this. If you're turning to smooth, creamy foods like ice cream, that's a sign that you need comfort. If you're eating bulky foods like bread or pasta or pizza or muffins or cake, that things that kind of fill the void, that is connected with loneliness, emptiness, some kind of internal void that gets symbolically filled with food. Third category is anything crunchy. If it's, you know, if you're all about Doritos or any kind of tortilla chips or things like that, or pretzels or anything with a crunch, that is associated with anger, frustration, irritation, annoyance, anger, rage. These are all forms of anger. And then what you want to do is find new ways of expressing that anger without turning it towards yourself for eating, or without by the food that you're actually eating. So to identify what's going on before, that use my food mood formula. How I developed it was in 20 years of exclusively treating people who have struggle with eating disorders in my clinical private practice. I only see people who struggle with eating disorders, with one exception, but her daughter had an eating disorder. So I started noticing that when people were saying, oh, I need, you know, I just couldn't stop eating ice cream, what they really needed was comfort. When they were eating all kinds of filling, bulky foods, what they really were doing was symbolically filling a void, and so on. You know, chocolate, people say, well, what about chocolate? Come on. Where does chocolate fit in the food mood formula? Well, chocolate is usually, you know, you either have it filled with some creamy filling, which would go to smooth and creamy, or it has nuts in it. So that goes to the anger category. Or it is like a dark chocolate, which is also crunchy, goes to the anger category. And if none of those fit, well, I want you to ask yourself, or if you're not having chocolate, you're having candy, maybe you're missing some sweetness in your life. So if chocolates or candy are your go-to, ask yourself about that. What sweetness are you missing in your life? So that's how you start to identify what's going on beforehand, just by the food that you are choosing to binge on or stress eat over. The next part of the question was, what is the replacement for feeling empty? Great question. Difficult question. It's hard to get in touch with those empty spaces within us. It is painful to realize there is a void. And so you got to go through some difficult self-reflection and ask yourself, what is the void? It's usually either something to do with people, either not having a partner, not having enough friends, or you have a partner, but you don't have a satisfying relationship. Or it's some other dissatisfaction in life. I'm just reading what Josh is writing. Hold that thought, Josh. Some other dissatisfaction in life. Maybe you're not doing the job that you wish that you could do. Maybe you don't have kids and you really want them. Maybe you have kids, but they left. You're an empty nester. There could be so many different reasons for that void. And depending on what that reason is, that's how you sort of fill the void. So you can't do anything about the fact that your kids are in college, for example, but you can mourn the fact that they're gone and heal the fact that they're gone and come to a place where the situation hasn't changed, but you feel differently about the situation, where you can say, okay, they are, you know, they're not home anymore. My house is empty, but I don't feel so bad about it. I'm happy that my children have launched and they're outliving their lives. Remind me that I'm saying this in about 4 years when my last one leaves. Okay. If you are having a dissatisfaction with a partner, well, and it leaves you empty. There's no worse emptiness in my mind. There's no worse loneliness than loneliness when you're with someone else or when you're with other people. That is a profound loneliness. And you got to figure out, well, can it be filled with this person? Do you need other things to do that other people that can kind of fill the void? Can you have other friends or other people that you have things in common with? So there's no one answer because everybody is an individual. And because we're individuals, we each have a different way of dealing with loneliness. And by the way, loneliness is often mistaken for boredom. People say, oh, I just eat when I'm bored. Well, boredom is like an umbrella emotion.
Hello?
And it kind of covers up other feelings. We say we're bored. Boredom is, I need something to do. Yeah? You want to do something. There's stuff to do. Hi, caller. Hello? Caller? I don't hear you. Sam? I don't hear anything. Sam, are you there? Hung up. Carly Gash, did you have problem getting through? She's on Instagram.
Hello?
Oh, there you are. Hi. Hello? Carly Gash. Hello? Welcome to the show. I don't hear you. All right. Sam, we're having some problem because... Yeah. Hello? She's not hearing me. It's Sam says there's something on your end, Carly Gash. I don't know what's going on. But you can text, you can drop the comment in or try, you can't get through. All right, you can leaving a comment in Instagram. I just want to say Josh is saying food isn't an addiction like other addictions. Well, it's interesting because a couple of years ago, I co-edited a book called Beyond the Primal Addiction with my mentor, the amazing Dr. Salman Akhtar. And it was called Beyond the Primal Addiction, but it was all addictions other than we chose not to do drug addiction or alcohol addiction or anything like that, but it was addictions. Food, even though, of course, you know, I don't believe in food addiction, but we'll get to that. You know, food, shopping, internet, sex, gambling, you know, all these addictions, they all have one thing in common. They are ways of coping. They are ways of coping. And even if you read Lance Doda's work on alcohol addiction and even drug addiction, there is a strong psychological component to it. It is not just a physiological addiction. So people are not addicted to the substance of food. A lot of times people say, but what about that research study that showed that rats prefer sugar over cocaine? Doesn't that prove that sugar is more addictive than cocaine? Or I think it was actually heroin. Maybe it was both. Well, the truth is that, first of all, rats are not motivated to get high. Rats don't care about heroin. They don't care about cocaine. They care about food. They care about survival. And sugar is food and sugar is survival. And that is why rats will go to sugar every time. And by the way, those rats were starved before they were allowed to choose between heroin and sugar. So if we're going to use the the idea of addiction, which again, I don't like it. I find it pejorative and somehow shaming. But if we're going to use that word, let's talk about an eating addiction as opposed to a food addiction. A food addiction means you're physiologically addicted to the substance of whatever it is you're eating. An eating addiction is you're using eating of any kind of food to resolve something emotional that you're addicted to eating as a way of coping. By the way, there was a study that set out to prove food addiction. So interesting. They set out to prove that food addiction was a thing, a real thing. And what they did was they got all these people, research subjects, and they told them, hey, we want you to eat your forbidden food. We want you to eat your forbidden foods. And their thought was, well, these people are going to eat their forbidden foods and they're not going to be able to stop because they're addicted to them. You know what happened? Something really interesting happened. The people in the study actually ate less of the forbidden foods. Now, why is this? Because of the anticipation of deprivation, because of the psychology of it. When you can't eat something, you're going to want it more. And then you feel addicted. When you are told, hey, eat as much as you want of your forbidden foods. Whew, that was hard to say. You can decide whether you want it and how much of it you're going to have. That pointed out the psychological aspect of food issues. And so they set out to prove that food addiction was a thing, and they actually ended up disproving it. Really interesting. So Josh, yes, thank you for bringing up that point. Absolutely. Food addiction is, and I hate the word addiction, but it's a way of coping. If you're turning to food, you are turning away from something else. Why it gets tricky is you may not know what that is. We get so good at coping that we don't even know we're being triggered. Things can happen and can trigger us. But before that awareness that we're upset even reaches our conscious mind, our conscious awareness, boom, let me call Postmates. Carly Gash, I know you're unable to get through. Do you want to post a question or something like that in Instagram? Also, Josh, I think you had asked something about guilt. So let me talk about guilt and shame. So guilt is when we feel guilty about something we've either done or something that we think we should do, but we haven't done. Guilt is, I really feel bad that I didn't do that, or I really feel bad that I did that. So guilt is, oh, hello, caller. Hello? Welcome to the show. Can you hear me?
Hello?
Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Carly Gash, can you hear me? All right. Sam, she's not hearing me. I hear her, but for some reason she's not hearing me. I don't know what's going on, Carly Gash. I can hear you perfectly, so I don't know why you're not hearing me. I'm sorry about that. All right. So guilt is, I feel bad that I didn't do that, or I feel bad that I, you know, food example. So Thanksgiving is coming up here in, Sam, Carly Gash is saying she called from a different number and the same thing happened. So maybe there's something on our end where people can't hear me. Okay, Sam's going to see what he can do. Hopefully we'll get it resolved. But if not, can you, Carly Gash, try again in a minute. Don't you love technology? Here we went from doing the show from a studio in LA to now we're just somehow doing it from my house, from the studio, through Instagram. It's all good, but it gets a little bit crazy sometimes. Okay, so guilt is about, like, Thanksgiving is coming up. When a lot of people overeat at Thanksgiving, and if you don't have an issue with food, you say, "Oh, I feel so bad. I feel a little guilty. I ate too much," or "Oh, I feel bad that I ate too much." But shame is feeling bad about yourself. So shame sounds like, what's wrong with me that I ate that? What's wrong with me? There's something wrong with me. Guilt is about something that you do or don't do. Guilt is about something you do or don't do. And shame is about who you are.
Hi, Carly, I'm calling from the signal's number, and I'm not hearing you again.
You're still not hearing me. You're still not hearing me. Okay, I don't know. All right, she's still not hearing me. I don't know why that is. Sorry, Carly Gash. Maybe it's some issue on our end, but I don't know. Sam's on the case. I could hear you perfectly, so All right, he'll figure it out. In the meantime, Carly Gash, you want to leave me a comment in Instagram and let me know what it is that is on your mind? Okay, so unconscious guilt. I think, Josh, you had asked about unconscious guilt. So unconscious guilt is when we don't consciously feel guilty, but we feel as if we don't, like we don't deserve things. So that we feel bad about ourselves. When we feel like we don't deserve things, we feel bad when we get things. Some of that is cultural. We're told, like, Carly Gash says, I noticed again, I'm living my life in fear and being triggered almost all the time. I guess I need a little encouragement to keep going and investigate. Well, this might actually go along with guilt. Carly Gash has been calling the show for a while. What we know about Carly Gash, your history is that you come from a family in a different country in which, you know, they are really struggling. And the idea is if you do well when the rest of your family in Kazakhstan is struggling, there could be consciously it's good for you, you're doing well. Unconsciously it's, oh, you're breaking the family rule. You're breaking the family rule, you're doing well. And that guilt can then be converted into guilt over food. So instead of, oh, I feel so guilty because I'm doing so well and my family is back in Kazakhstan and I'm living the life in America, you don't think that. You think, oh, I feel so guilty for eating this or that. So you have an inner bully. I think that, you know, you've heard me often say, be curious, not critical. So Carly Gash, what, you know, do you notice anything that's going on in your life before you start having these bullying thoughts? That would be an interesting place to start. Because sometimes the number one obstacle to success is, drumroll, happiness, fear of happiness. And consciously, that sounds ludicrous. Why would you be afraid of happiness? Of course you want to be happy. You want to be at your best weight. You want to be living your best life. You want to be happy. Whatever it is, you know, of course you do, consciously. But then an unconscious hidden part of you can say, oh, no, 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 that's not okay. Many cultural prohibitions to that, not just your family, Carly Gash. What do we say? Oh, it's, you know, you climbed, it's too good to be true. The other shoe's going to drop. by the way, what is that other shoe? And why is it going to drop? And from where? But you get the idea. This idea, okay, Carly Gash is saying, I usually have a leap of success. And then the bullying voice kicks in. So this really goes to that unconscious guilt. Josh, Carly Gash is, unbeknownst to her, absolutely answering your question about unconscious guilt. So consciously, you have this leap of success, yay for you. And then another part of you that has a prohibition against success. You're not supposed to be successful. You're supposed to suffer. Too good to be true. How can you be successful when your family is suffering? All this kind of stuff. Also, some people with certain religious backgrounds almost think that sometimes it can be, it's like better to suffer, that somehow there's something sinful about enjoying your life too much. So all of these prohibitions can be at work, or some of them. And so Carly Gash, you have to remind yourself that you're allowed to be successful. You work hard. You are a good person. You deserve to have goodness in your life. This is what you have to absolutely remember. You get to feel good about your life. So when you use very, and by the way, for those of you who are new to the show, when she says she's varying herself using the very technique, people say, well, how do I respond to myself when I'm upset? And I developed this acronym. I'm a lover of acronyms. So I developed this acronym, VARY, V-A-R-Y. You're supposed to vary the way that you respond to yourself. Instead of turning to food, vary it. Respond to yourself with words. VARY stands for validate, acknowledge, and reassure yourself. So Carly Gash, of course, I am feeling scared because I got the message that success is not for me. I got the message that success will make other people jealous, envious, upset with me. I got the message that if I'm successful, I'm not going to be part of the family anymore. And of course, that's a very hard thing to cope with. That's hard. That's a painful, difficult, upsetting state to be in. That's validate and acknowledge. And then you reassure yourself. I'm practicing this. I'm going to allow myself to feel successful. It's going to take time, but I'm going to embrace my success. I'm in America, land of opportunity. I am taking my opportunity, and I'm allowed to have this. I give myself permission to be happy. It is not a setup for failure. It is nothing to be ashamed of. Right? The Y stands for yourself. Carly Gash. And hey, oh, look who just joined on Instagram. Kelly Gunter. Kelly, hi, Kelly. Kelly Gunter is my co-host of the Binge Free Babes program, the Binge Free Babes Project. She wrote an amazing book called You Have Such a Pretty Face, all about her experiences with she lost 243 pounds. Kelly, try calling the show. We may be having difficulties, but try calling the show and talk about it for yourself. But she lost 243 pounds, thought she'd be happy. Was she happy? No. You know why? Because she never got to what was going on inside her. She never got to why she was turning to food. She never got to that, and she never healed until she did. And now she's healed and healing, as we all are. It's a constant process to heal and support ourselves. That doesn't mean being in recovery. That means being human. So Kelly or anyone else who might want to call, let me give you the number again. It is 323-203-0815. We may be having technical difficulties, but give it a try. Carly Gash, did that resonate for you? She's on Instagram. I think so. Yeah. So isn't it interesting that fear of happiness can be such a major obstacle to weight loss or anything? And she's saying, yes, absolutely. Yay, good. Fear of happiness can be such a major obstacle to weight loss, to self-care, to getting to your goals, whether they're your weight loss goals or your life goals. There can be such a terror of, and then what? And the and then what is, you know, things are going to fall apart, or people are going to be envious, or it can't last, or all of these ideas that we have. I remember someone once told one of my patients, someone said, oh, well, you were doing so well, I knew it was only a matter of time before you crashed and burned. What? This was a parent, one of her parents, by the way. Lovely, right? But this is the kind of thing that this kind of message we get. And so, of course, when we start to feel good, we can get scared. And by the way, what is one way in which you can avoid feeling quote unquote too good? What is one way? Never feel too good about your weight. Always be upset about your appearance. Always be worrying about your weight. If you never feel too good, then you're not gonna tempt the gods to destroy you, to take away all the goodness. If you never step into paradise, you can never be kicked out. So that is something to think about. Food for thought. Okay. Kelly, I don't know if you can join me, but I would love if you do. There's something wrong here. I'm trying to wave at her on Instagram. I'm not even sure she's hearing me. All right. So any other questions? I am happy to answer anything, or try to call me, or, you know, if you're on Instagram, drop a comment. If not, I'm going to randomly open my book and I am going to read whatever it is that I wrote. Okay. I'm going to read about loneliness. Page 37, for those of you who have the binge cure. So loneliness, which is often mistaken for boredom. So in the book, I talk about Roberta. Now, Roberta, phones are not working right now. Okay, never mind. Do not call me. The phones are not working. That means you're just going to have to hear from me or drop a comment on Instagram, and I will be happy to answer it. In the meantime, let me talk about loneliness and Roberta. She had an active social life, but she felt like something was just missing. And she would go to gallery openings. This is pre-COVID. She'd go to feel a sense of unity with them. And she didn't have the sense that they were enjoying her company. She just thought they were kind of putting up with her, even though these were friends of hers for many years. And so social interactions were just exhausting to her. So the first thing she did when she arrived home from one of these events was head straight for the kitchen. Also, when she went out, she would barely eat anything because she didn't want to eat in front of people. So they'd have regular meals, and she'd have like a little salad or a little soup or a little something else. And of course, she was starving when she got home. Hi, Debbie. Glad that you are here with me on Instagram. Please leave a comment if you have any questions for me. I am happy to answer it. I just found out that the phones at LA Talk Radio are not working right now. So Instagram it is. And I will go on talking about Roberta and loneliness. So Roberta felt a profound sense of loneliness even when she was with other people. I think I mentioned that earlier in the show, that to me the worst loneliness is when you are feeling alone in the company of other people. That's just so painful. The state of loneliness means wanting to connect with others. Being in the same room as other people, doing things together, is not the same as feeling safe, fulfilled, connected by those relationships. So if you experience profound emptiness and disconnection, food is an easy way to symbolically fill up. It is definitely a solution momentarily, but it is not a good one, and it is not a lasting one. The solution to loneliness is one, people, but also turning loneliness into solitude. So solitude is about being alone, but being with a nice part of yourself, a warm, nurturing, loving part of yourself that shows up for you. An inner voice that's always available to offer understanding and reassurance to you. And again, as I was saying earlier, loneliness is often mistaken for boredom. One of the comments I hear most often is something along the lines of, I wasn't feeling anything emotional. I wasn't feeling anything emotional. I was just bored. I eat when I'm bored. If you eat when you're bored, maybe you're actually lonely. So the key to stopping boredom is to be active and productive. Eating is something to do. It is an action, but it doesn't solve the real problem. But when you meet the true need, whether it is loneliness or boredom, you stop using food for comfort and distraction. And the way you achieve solitude instead of feeling lonely is to cultivate a really kind part of yourself. Often, the way we talk to ourselves is super harsh. As an example, someone just the other day said, this person said that they were disgusted. They were disgusted with themselves. They looked in the mirror and they said, "You are disgusting. No one will love you. You are gross. If people knew what you do with food," digging it out of the garbage can stuff, trash can stuff like that, "they would be so disgusted. They never want to talk to you again. You're disgusting." Ouch, right? And what do you think happened? After this person said this, what do you think they did? They went and ate a bunch more stuff. Why? Why is that? Because the way that they were talking to themselves made them feel so bad that they use food for comfort. If food is the only way that you comfort yourself, if food is the only way that you escape your own mean voice, then you're going to eat. So the most important thing that you can do is cultivate a kind, loving response to yourself. And by the way, this might seem really difficult, but I'm going to bet that you are one way to other people and another way to yourself. If a friend of yours said, "Hey, I have this issue with food, and you know what? I threw away this cake, and then later, after everyone went to bed, I dug it out of the trash can and I ate it. Oh, what's wrong with me?" Would you say to your friend, "Oh, you are disgusting. I don't even want to talk to you again. I see you in a totally different light"? I don't think so. I think you'd have compassion. Right? Where's that compassion for yourself? If you would talk to yourself in the way that you talk to other people, you're going to feel so much better. Then you're going to say something like, "Okay, I waited till everyone went to bed. I dug the rest of the cake out. I stuffed it in my face. Clearly, that is a sign that something is eating at me. Let me be curious. Let me figure out what that is. Instead of calling myself names, I'm going to be really curious, not critical, and I'm going to ask myself, okay, let me use Dr. Nina's food mood formula, cake. Am I filling a void? What are the voids in my life? What would I be thinking about if I was not thinking about food? What would I be worried about? What would be on my mind?" Then you go, "Oh, well, maybe I'd be upset because this thing happened at work, or my husband's driving me crazy, or my wife's driving me crazy, or, you know, I just, I, you know, Or what do I do I haven't talked to my brother in 2 years because we have totally different political affiliations and I miss him and that's a void. That kind of thing. See, when you ask yourself questions instead of calling yourself names, you know what happens? You can find answers. When you look in the mirror and call yourself disgusting and call yourself all kinds of names and disparage yourself in a vitriolic, horrid way, you just feel bad. And when you feel bad, you're going to use food to feel better. But when you are curious, why did I do that? What's going on with me? What's bothering me? What's upsetting me? Then you can find the answers to that and you can resolve that directly. You cannot simultaneously be cruel, mean, harsh, and critical and judgmental to yourself and be nice. No one's ever had the conversation that goes along the lines of "you're disgusting." Oh, but I'm really here for myself. No. So I often say that the work that I do is a psychological exorcism. We have to get these ideas, these ways that we relate to ourselves out of our mind. And you learned how to talk to yourself in that way. You learned in some way. By the way, if you talk to yourself in second person, if you look in the mirror and say, "you," like this person did, they said, "you're disgusting, you're gross, you this, you, you, you." I just disclosed it's a he. He didn't say, "I'm disgusting, I'm gross." No, he said, "you." So one thing you can do is, who is talking? Who is that you voice? Who does it sound like? Did anyone talk to you that way? Did you hear anyone talk to anyone else that way? Is this anything that is familiar at all? And whether it is or it isn't, try changing it to I. When you say I, it's really hard to be mean to yourself from an I place. It's really hard to say, "I'm disgusting. I can't even do it even to demonstrate it. I'm so gross." Right? It's harder to say. So one just practical thing that you can do is switch that you to an I. And even if you find it easy to say it to yourself, then that's not productive. That's only going to make you feel bad. So really cultivating a kind, supportive, generous attitude towards yourself. Be in the judgment-free zone. So you dug cake out of a trash can. Okay, clearly something is up. Something is bothering you. Something is really upsetting you. You're trying to stuff something down. What is it? Let's be curious about that. Not critical. Let's be interested. Okay. Since I can't get calls today, I'm just going to keep opening my book and reading from it because I know that it will relate to someone. And again, if you're on Instagram with me, drop a question, drop a comment. I would love to hear from you. Oh, here's the good one. Here's a good one. What's the point of feeling your feelings? What's the point of feeling your emotions? Now, this is part of a defense mechanism, which is a mode of protection called intellectualizing. All right, let me talk to you about Yasmin. Yasmin had a horrible boss, worse than Meryl Streep's character in The Devil Wears Prada. If you saw that movie, that is a really bad boss. Her boss was scornful, insulting, dismissive, mean, and unreasonable. Her boss would tell her that she couldn't do anything right. He criticized her performance. He gave specific instructions on what to do, and even if she followed them to the letter, he'd find mistakes. So one day, Yasmin came to me, and she said she had a confession. So I have a confession to make. And she proceeded to tell me everything she'd eaten since our last session. And she was so upset with herself. She was so disgusted. She was mad at herself. She'd gained weight. She accused herself of being a failure, believing that she couldn't do anything right. And I suggested she was taking the anger she felt towards her boss and turning it on herself. And I said, the way you talk to yourself affects the way you feel, and the way you feel affects what you eat. So if you're self-critical, you feel terrible, that makes you binge for comfort. What Yasmin said was, so what? How is realizing that supposed to help me? What am I supposed to do with that information? So she was being logical. She was going into her head as a way of staying out of her feelings. To stop that cycle, Yasmin needed to express her feelings about her boss so she wouldn't turn them on herself. And she looked horrified when I said this. She's like, I can't do that. I'd be fired on the spot. And I explained that expressing feelings does not mean going to the person who is upsetting you and saying, hey, you're really upsetting me. Most of the time that doesn't work. Often that doesn't work, and definitely doesn't work with an unreasonable, awful boss. So expressing feelings does not mean actually telling her boss, or for you, doesn't mean telling a person what she thinks of them, but you have to process those feelings. You've got to process them, which means speak them, write them, talk to a friend, get them out. And when you express those feelings, you stop using food to direct your anger inward. And Yasmin had difficulty being angry with her boss. Like she would say, but you know, he's a boss, and like, yeah, he's hard on me. So she easily turned her anger towards herself. She couldn't be mad at him. She could be really mad at herself. So binging did two things for her. First, it provided comfort, helped her numb her feelings. Second, it gave her a way to express all that bottled up anger by directing it inward. So instead of saying, my boss is out of control, he is the boss from hell, and I am so upset at how I am being treated. I have no control over this boss. Instead, she said, I have no control over food. And then she said, well, what's the point of talking about my feelings? It won't change anything. So in one sense, she was absolutely right. Her boss was not going to change. And like Yasmin, we all have encountered people and situations that we can't change. Oh, it's the worst. I think powerlessness and helplessness is the worst feeling. But we can change how we respond and how we feel about those situations. So, you know, it is likely that at some point in your life, you have experienced the death of someone you know or love. And when a person dies, we do not say, well, they're gone. There's nothing I can do about it. What's the point of crying? Of course not. When you attend a wake or sit Shiva or mourn in some other way, rituals help you grieve the person you lost. You feel a terrible loss. You feel a terrible emptiness, or some loss, some emptiness, depending on who that person was to you. And then you start feeling better. The person you lost lives on in your memory and in your thoughts, but the intensity of the loss diminishes. The situation hasn't changed, but it doesn't hurt as much. So we don't change the situation by allowing ourselves to process our feelings. We change the way we feel about the situation. So that's just some food for thought for you. The next time you start thinking about food or recriminating yourself for what you ate, really think about it symbolically, or think about it, think about the food mood formula, think about the things that I've talked about, and really look at how you're talking to yourself. Practice makes progress. I know you guys can do this. Thank you for joining me here on the Dr. Nina Show, here on LA Talk Radio and Instagram. You can find me here every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific. Or you can listen later on Apple Podcasts. Just look for the Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio on Apple Podcasts. And if you would like to connect more with me, please join my Dr. Nina's Food for Thought community on Facebook. It's a wonderful community of people from all over the world who get it and who are actively working to really heal their relationship with themselves and with food. And I hope to find you there. If you're on Instagram, just the link is actually in my bio. And if you're not on Instagram, just do a search on Facebook, Dr. Nina's Food for Thought Community, Outsmart Emotional Eating. See you there. Have a great week, everyone. Bye for now.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.